I'll introduce them briefly, and they'll talk a little bit about their operations as we go on. Bruce Vollen, who's the guy that you've seen on all these posters out here, he's sort of our poster child, and he's that, when you hear the home place video, when you watch that buttery voice you hear to start out with, that's Bruce talking. So that's Bruce, you probably, when he starts answering questions now, you're going to probably recognize his voice because he'll be the guy that you heard on that video. And Bruce is the owner of Midway Service in Baltic, South Dakota. It's been a lot of years now since they put in blender pumps, but we'll talk about that. But he's the guy too that when you look at our current campaign, was one of the guys who sort of made it clear to us that what we really need to do is have, as I said yesterday, sort of that been there, done that approach to this. Let's take people to Congress and take people to the media who've already done the stuff that people say you can't do, or who have done the things that they said would cause problems and haven't caused problems. And Bruce has been very helpful to us there. Next to him is Kent Satrang, who I believe won the award the year before. He is the, what's your title, president or something? CEO of PetroServe USA. I wanted to say PetroServe America. PetroServe USA, headquartered in, is it actually headquartered in Moorhead? Yeah, Moorhead, Minnesota. So we got a Minnesotan here. Runs a bunch of stations, some of them branded, some of them unbranded. Two different brands. Some of them sell E85, E15. Some of them don't. So he's got some varied experience, and a lot of the questions that people have or that marketers have about these things are things that Kent will be able to answer for you, because he's seen it from all the different directions. There's a story that I was thinking of today, because it was about a guy looking at a horse, and he wanted to know if it was good quality horse, and the farmer was kind of lazy, and he said, "I don't know, why don't you go ask the horse?" And the guy came back in, he said, "I don't know, I don't think I'm going to buy it." And he said, "Well, what did the horse say?" And he goes, "I don't know, his voice was kind of muffled, and he had really bad breath." And he said, I think maybe you were talking to the wrong end of the horse." So today we have retailers that we're going to get the story on blender pumps and E15 and E85 straight from the horse's mouth. And that's those guys. And I'm going to sit here, so you know what that makes me, the opposite end of the horse. But we're going to start out, when we do retailer workshops where we want to talk to them about the type of things that they should consider if they're going to do higher blends of ethanol, whether it be just E85 or E15 or blender pumps or whatever it might be, the first slide that I usually put up is the first question that I've gotten from so many people, and probably you've gotten if people have if you've asked a retailer about doing this thing. And question one that I'm going to throw out to these guys, and then we'll move over here, and if we have another microphone, I'd take it up here. The first question that some of them ask me is why the hell would I want to do that? So question one to these guys is, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to go to all this work for E85, E15, or whatever you did? And whichever one of you wants to go first, go ahead.
The why question, in our business, we were just knocking on about 7 years worth of having our blender pumps in place, and that seems like a long, long time ago almost. It's a little bit hard to remember how things were. We started to get a little bit of pressure from some of our customers, it was an ideal time for us to make a change with the times that we were having. Kind of a small town business, just myself and my parents essentially, but we definitely needed a change, and I'm not saying we had the funding to even make the change, but I guess we stuck our neck out there and borrowed some money, found some funding, got in touch with a lot of the right people in the industry. I'm not the smartest or most educated person in the world, but what I do know is it's really critical to surround yourself with a lot of good people that maybe can help you along the way. So I guess to answer your question why, it was just because we needed to make a move to set ourselves apart from the competition. And I might not have even have known to what magnitude this was going to, essentially, I mean, it just exploded our business, and I'm sure we can touch on volumes and all of that at a later time here today. But it was just something we actually had to make a change, buy, be bought, go away, go broke, keep beating your head against the wall. One of those things is what we were going to do. And thankfully, you know, we made the right decision and embraced ethanol. You know, as an investor, as a retailer, it's grown our business exponentially, you know, in the last 7 years. It's taken us from just a small town business to actually a nice, medium-sized, comfortable business for all of my family, you know, and our employees. We've gone from three of us, four of us, you know, maybe one part-timer, to now we're looking at, I don't even know how many people are on the payroll roster, of a dozen, you know, and six or seven of them are full-time, so that's pretty good stuff.
Kent, same question. I know you guys have been kind of in E85 for a long time, but blender pumps, that sort of thing. What went into your decision?
Well, we are actually a farm machine and oil company. We do business as PetroServe USA. So, of course, we're owned by farmers. So the farmers would like us to sell their fuel. And I was really impressed by Bruce when I met him this morning. He said that as a private business and a family-owned business, he wants to sell the products that his farmers grow. So I thought that was really a great way to look at it. And just for consumer choice, you know, why wouldn't you want to give your consumers five choices rather than two? And it really doesn't cost you anymore, and you make great margin at it. So I always say choice at the blender pump puts change in everybody's pocket. And I think that's really true right now with the dollar off on E85 that we're selling. That's saving our consumers money, and our sales have gone up. And like Bruce said, it's really been our motto at PetroServe USA is helping America fuel better. That's probably why you were trying Petro America. But we really have taken our business from, you know, when I think we started out at $7 million in sales, 1998, and now we're $175 million. And a lot of that is based upon offering ethanol and giving people choice and not trying to push it down their throat, but not having the oil companies say you can't sell it. So we like giving people, letting them choose rather than myself or Bruce or a big oil company deciding that what we're going to sell.
Okay. The second slide I always have is one that says, can I, which is basically related more to equipment. One of the things that we hear a lot of, and you guys were both up on Capitol Hill with us, one of the myths that we hear a lot is, boy, this is just going to cost a fortune. Even if they're just talking about E15, there's this myth out there that this will cost several hundred thousand dollars to do. Both of you have done, you know, ground ups. You've done, well, yours was a rebuild, but Kent, you've done conversions and that sort of thing. So as far as the equipment goes, you know, what was required? Were you able to do it with just your existing tanks and pumps, or what did you have to buy, and kind of what were the costs of it?
Yeah, in most cases, you know, your existing tanks and piping will work. We like to put in blender pumps, so that, you know, we've put those in, so I suppose that's going to cost you maybe $24,000 or something like that. But if you have to buy a new pump, that's going to be $17,000, so it's not that much more. So really there hasn't been any, you know, we have had some stations where we've had fiberglass piping that isn't really compatible with ethanol, and so we have replaced that, and that can cost, you know, $150,000. But I would say in probably 90%, well, probably 98% of the cases across North Dakota, Minnesota, whatever market you're in, it's not going to cost anything more than a few thousand more for a blender pump, if that's where you want to do it. And if you want to convert over an existing pump, that is, you know, $1,000. So not bad at all.
And, you know, for us, your question is, can I? After doing, you know, some pretty extensive research, you know, we came from a couple old mechanical suction style pumps, and this was a really big deal for us. You know, we didn't have canopy. We didn't start even with a modern set of pumps. So it was a pretty major learning curve. We found out, you know, our piping was modern enough and our tanks were modern enough. Essentially, it came down to there was no funding at that time when we did. I think this is, we're just knocking on 7 years now with these blenders. So we just kind of went to our wholesaler, our vendor, to see what the equipment was going to cost, and decided that yes, we can probably pull the trigger on this and make it work. I think Ron and I talked. I think it was it in Washington where we were talking about our. It was a micro loan, and they actually did a study. They send somebody out from the state to do a study on your business and the volumes you have, and they give you a projection of what they think that you can come up with for an end result number, you know, and I think our numbers at that time were, you know, we'll say 300,000 gallons a year, and the lady that did this extensive study, you know, got back to us in a month or so and said, you know, I think this will probably work, Bruce. You can probably expect to gain somewhere around that 30%. Well, within 2 years, we were knocking on 1 million gallons. So I might be getting off the subject a little bit of can I, but this was a great story that I completely forgot about until Ron and I were talking about this out in D.C. I think that must have been on for the fly-in. But nevertheless, to know that you can do it by somebody else's attest, I'd like to just let anybody here, if you've got retailers that are looking at this, it's so simple. I mean, it sets you apart from the competition. Well, I mean, like you would not believe. You know, I've got gas stations up and down the road from us, and you know, I'm sure they dislike me to a certain degree. You know, I'm not because I'm not a good person, just because I'm probably the thorn in their side because I'm always offering these blends. And truly, you know, Kent, it's the choice. Like you said, that's what it's all about. These people love to stop in and make the choice. And that's essentially what a blender is doing for everybody. As soon as you realize that you can do it financially, infrastructure, the thing sells itself once it's in place.
You know, before I lose this thought too, Bruce, you mentioned like for your retailers, we compete in larger cities, larger than Baltic, I'll say. But we're in Fargo and Bismarck. And sometimes you have a grocery store that comes in business right next to you. And then you've got a gas war. Well, it's really nice to be able to sell E15 and be maybe have a 10-cent advantage over the gas station or the grocery store who's trying to, you know, really bring the price down. So there's a lot of marketing advantages that you can have by selling E15 also.
And I think, you know, as far as the equipment deal, and I know Bruce and I, when we talked about that, the difference was he was going to have to upgrade anyway. And I believe that, you know, the difference in his entire, I mean, you were talking about, what, $150,000 you were going to spend anyway, and in order to make it E85 compatible, it was like $165,000, something like that, the difference. So an extra $12,000. So you're talking incremental dollars in all these cases, but it gave him the opportunity to sell a lot of different products. So then after the can, I always remember that, you know, everybody had that English teacher who said, I don't know, when you asked, you raise your hand and asked if you can go to the bathroom, and they'd say, I don't know, can you? So the next one is may I, and basically when I put the may I slide up there, it's generally the other thing that we hear from retailers that we work with is, boy, this is really complicated. You know, I don't want to have to fill out all these forms. I don't want to have to register for this thing or that. Fire marshals, all that sort of stuff. What was the, as far as regulators, bureaucrats, whoever you had to deal with, was the process of being approved to do that, what was that like?
Well, I don't like to go through that process and regulators, and that would probably stop me, but this, putting an E15 in particular, was really easy. There was really not much to it. You need to register with the EPA. So you send in a federal registration letter. Now, the ethanol groups like ACE or other groups will actually send you that letter, so all you have to do is put it on your letterhead. And then actually, I emailed mine down to a guy in Washington, D.C., who was right across from the EPA. He hand-delivered it, and I had my approval within 30 days. So it was really quite easy. And then the second thing you have to do is you have to file a fuel mitigation, misfueling mitigation plan with the EPA. That would have normally stopped me. A lot of words there I don't want to deal with. But really, that wasn't too hard either. You just have to send a letter in saying that you're going to comply with the industry's misfueling plan. So that was not a big deal. The third thing, you have to agree to participate in a survey, and that cost about $100 per store. So I have six stores, so that was not a big deal. We got registered for that. You need to properly label and use the EPA-approved labels, which is that orange E15, so that's not a problem. You certainly want to tell your people, your customers, which is the ethanol, which is the E15, which is the E85, so we had no problem doing that. You need to ensure that the product transfer documents contain the proper information, which, of course, your ethanol plants, as many of you are dealing with, are they provide that. So basically, you just have to make sure that you're not selling E17 and calling it E15. So that's not a problem. You have to research with your state, local, and federal regulations regarding storage blends. Not a problem in the state of North Dakota. Now the EPA and our North Dakota petroleum marketers are trying to make that very difficult. They're saying that the hoses and the breakaways and the nozzles that were approved 5 years ago are no longer legal. And so they're always throwing you a different angle. But we have a very farmer-active legislature and governor in North Dakota that we've worked with very closely. And we really want to revitalize the main streets of small towns in rural North Dakota. We want to partner the oil fields of western North Dakota with the corn and soybean fields of eastern North Dakota. We've done a great job of that, and it's really boomed our economy. So they're good to work with, and each state is probably going to be different. Haven't had any problems with the local fire department in Fargo or Bismarck. And then you must conform to all of the reed vapor pressures, which means that basically you won't be able to sell unless you're... Is there anybody here from Antarctica? I don't think so. No, so unless you're from Antarctica, you're not going to be able to sell during the months of June through September. You won't be able to sell E15 to the 2001 and newer cars. Now, I kept it in and put it in yellow hose, and I'm selling that to the flex fuel vehicles. So it's not a hard process at all.
Well, thank goodness Kent did a stellar job there doing his research. That's pretty much, in a nutshell, everything that you'd ever really want to know about conforming and more. As far as the may, I guess I can say thank God for moms, because I gather all this information. I kind of turn it over to my mom, and she kind of just had to run with a lot of this information with a little bit of help from me along the way, and some good help from some good groups that we surrounded ourselves with. You know, as far as the RFSGA, the APA, a configuration of your dispensers you turn into the EPA and getting it approved. And you know, we actually went as far as to register with the EPA to accept and trade RINs. I'm here to tell you that it's pretty simple stuff. If a small family business can figure out just how easy this is to manage and to make money at, there's no reason any retailer out there can't do this.
And you kind of touched on it when you started going with RINs, and it was the next segment. It's always sort of and how's that working out for you thing. The good, the bad, the ugly. What have the results been? What were consumer reactions? What were sales? And we do have Bruce. We've got a couple of your slides up here. If you want to put up, I don't know. Oh, I can advance this thing, but. So the question is basically, what were the results? You've hinted at them in a couple of instances, but we'll put these up, because when you start talking about numbers, it's always hard to imagine the number in your head. But we've got a couple of charts here, and I'll grab the control and move it ahead. But
let's see what you've got here. Yep, and I probably can speak to this without even looking at it. You know, our results it was just an immediate change. You know, we went from probably 7.5% ethanol total sales prior to these blender pumps to somewhere in that 20 to 25% ethanol on a daily gross sales.
You're talking ethanol overall.
Yeah, that's total ethanol gallons. I mean, if I sold 100 gallons of gas that day, I probably sold 20 to 25 gallons of that was ethanol.
You notice in this particular one, this was last year, the gray bar on the bottom was E0. And after the base fuel was changed, you can see that went away. In Bruce's case, and I use this for an example a lot, so E10 was still his best-selling fuel. But you've got if you see that top bar, it's E85, and you'll notice how that spikes up last summer. Leads me to the one that, if this has been on our infographic, and a lot of you have seen this before, but that spike that you see there, the spike downward, which is actually more E85 sales, it goes along with the fact that RIN prices went up and gas price relative to ethanol went down. This particular graph shows the bottom part is supposed to look like a brick wall because that's 10%, that's the blend wall. The yellow is Bruce's overall ethanol volume. And on the right-hand side, you've got the RIN price. And if you explain how you deal with RINs and how you then apply that to the fuel, and that sort of explains where this volume went.
Right, so with every load of ethanol that we get from the plant, along with that, obviously, I'm probably just preaching to the choir here, you know, you get your RIN per gallon. And that's something that we sell. I like to sell on a pretty consistent basis. You know, obviously, you know, I never got a chance to sell a $1.40 RIN. I probably did get a chance to maybe sell a 2 or 3 cent RIN somewhere along the way. But just active sales, you know, accumulate enough RINs to make it marketable for whomever is maybe your marketing arm, or, you know, we actually have had the chance to sell a few of them direct to people with obligations. You know, so you can take that RIN, you know, and I've got a formula. I plug in my numbers every day, you know, and then, of course, I back the RIN out of that kind of on an average of what the RINs traded for the previous day. And I know approximately within a few tenths of a cent, usually, what my base cost is on every blend that we sell. And with that said, you know, I'm not saying that RINs haven't been... they haven't helped us be quite profitable in some of these blends as well, because I'm certainly not doing this because I need the practice. I like to make some money at this deal, you know, and coming from just being another one in the crowd selling E0 and E10, this little bit of work to figure out how to accept and trade and market your RINs and put that back into your customer's pocket. And that's something I look at today. I see stations selling E85 for anywhere from 10 to 50 or 60 cents a gallon more than we sell it for. You know, if you keep a really solid, consistent price for these people, they're going to start to call your gas station home, the home place, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So we see that a lot. You know, people, I mean, that I've never seen consistently stop, and finally they'll get a chance to confront somebody that they know and ask, how come your gas price is always so cheap? And that's a good thing for me to hear, because knowing that you're consistently keeping that price at as low a level as you possibly can and still paying yourself back, you know, that's pretty gratifying for me. Maybe getting off just a little bit on the whole RIN thing, but... in a nutshell, that's kind of how I handle RINs. I like to sell them about once a month, you know. And if maybe if a farmer marketed his grain once a month and didn't look back, and you just took a snapshot of one single day, you know, you might be just as well off marketing whatever you have on a regular basis and taking your average over the course of that year.
We've got those slides. Yeah, you put up Kent's slides. You want which One of the things that I'd point out, we don't need to go back to that other slide, but typically when retailers sell RINs, it's not something where if they get fuel today and the RIN value is a dollar, they can't assume that dollar right off the bat, because it might not be a dollar when they sell. It might be higher, it might be lower. So what most retailers have done who market RINs is they will sell it and then apply that proceeds to the next however many gallons that represented. And so that's why you saw in that thing where the green line, the volume trailed that, because after Bruce sold them, then he applied the majority of that RIN value back to the pump price, and when the pump price got lower, his volume went higher. So that's something to keep in mind. If you know what the RIN price is today and you think there's a retailer out there that's ripping somebody off, remember that he can't necessarily sell them, because he has to have, you know, a certain amount of them before anybody will buy them. Now, you know, the other solution is you could always buy from a plant that's already netting the RINs out, and that makes it a lot simpler, and I know retailers like that, and that's not necessarily, I don't know if Kent, if that's what they do there, but your slides are up here. Which one have you got there? Okay, let me see. Is that it? Yep.
Yeah, we don't, is this on? We don't deal with the RINs, because we don't have Bruce's mom there to help us.
That's right.
So, but
he's not kidding. Bruce's mom tracks those things.
I'm going to get her card after the meeting here. But so we buy them right from our ethanol plant, netted out, and that works really pretty well also. And we try to sell our gasoline and our ethanol at the same margin. I think to sell ethanol at 2 cents margin and gas at 30 cents margin really isn't fair to the gas companies we buy from either. So we try to keep them the same. Now, how's it going for us was your question? This is our Bismarck and Fargo markets. We have 3 stores in Bismarck, Mandan that we test marketed E15 last September, and this happens to be, I think, the month of December here that's up. And then we also have 3 that are in the Fargo market. And so last year we sold about 16,000 gallons in those 3 stores of E85, E30, E20, and E15, with the majority of it being E85. And this year that's up to 49,000 gallons, so that's tripled. If you take a look at market share, so that 49,600 gallons, that is 18.2% of our total sales. So I have heard some pretty large numbers that, you know, you're selling like 65% of all of your sales are E15, E20, E30, and E85, but we're currently at 18%. Now, we're in a fairly large community where I'm dealing with maybe 100 other gas stations, and so I have to be a little bit careful how I market, because, you can cause a gas war, and that's good for consumers, but not so good for me. And so that's the market. That's been tremendous growth, I think. Now, in the Fargo market, we were only at 2%, and now we're actually up to 6.3%. So if you look at the 11 months that we did sell E85, E30, E20, and E15, in the 6 stores combined last year, we sold about 258,000 gallons. And of what we call the mid-grade ethanol blends, this year that's up to 676,000 gallons. So that's a nice increase. That's 2.6 times. And E15 has really taken off, I would say, fairly well. It was running probably about 10 to 20 cents, still is about 10 to 20 cents cheaper than what we're selling the E10 for. But you still have to get people to try it. And so that's why we did the marketing campaign with the gal who was on the picture up there, saying that it's safe, it's economical, it's good for the environment, and NASCAR uses it. And so that's just getting people started. And, you know, any time you're in infancy in any market, any product that you're selling, it's going to take a little bit of time. But we've been very pleased with what we're seeing from E15. So if you want to go to the next slide, Ron.
That one.
This one here.
Attacking the blend wall. There you go.
Yeah. So attacking the blend wall. If you really want to talk openly and honestly here, I'll actually show you my gallons. Nobody take any pictures of these, of course, because I don't want my competitors to know. But if you look at We sold about 5% of all of our 6,552,000 gallons in sales. About 5% were E15. Now, that's going to get better as people realize, yes, I can use it in my vehicle. It is approved. But what is that? And then, I guess the next thing would be is 5%, about 4.5% were E85 sales. And then a little bit of E30 and hardly any E20 because I think it's only offered at one pump. So if you look at the total there, we've got 676,000. That's 10.3% when I combine the Fargo and Bismarck stores. Interestingly enough, Bismarck has a 17% market share, and that has a refinery in its community. Fargo's right in the middle of the corn production and soybean production, and yet it still only has about 6%. So there's lots of interesting statistics here, but really, when you boil that down, then if you take, okay, I sold E15, I sold 291,000 gallons, that doesn't say anything about the blend wall, really. It's not 17% that I'm selling, it's 17% of my market share. But if you take how much ethanol was in that E15, it amounts to 43,700 gallons. And with the E85, it amounts to, if I take 85% times every gallon I sold, it amounts to 227,000 gallons. So when you add up, do all the math, it comes out to 306,500 gallons. And that's about 13.4%. So we've gone from, probably 10%, well, I guess it was 10% exactly, because we were selling a little bit of E85, and we also sell a little bit of premium. You can see that actually our mid-grade blends now are outselling premium, probably 5-1. 676,000 gallons premium, we sold 171. And so we sold 800, with the E10 that we're selling, we sold 877,000 gallons of ethanol at those six stores. We have 23 stores. We're going to start putting E15 in more of the Scenic stations that we have in the Tesoro stations. They both agreed to do that. So that's an increase of 42% in our ethanol this year. That's 37 more loads of ethanol. And I could do the math and tell you how many bushels of corn it is coming out of my owners in the farmers' fields, and that's revitalizing the little town of Castleton. And there's six communities in North Dakota that have ethanol plants, and they all have good basketball teams for some reason, because their schools are doing well. So that's really what we're in it about, is trying to revitalize rural Main Street. So.
Okay, good. And I think, in this case, that was one of the questions was, I was going to ask if that's all of them or if that's just a selected group of, you have some that are branded, some that are a different brand, and some that are unbranded. What's the fuel selection across those?
Yeah, we have 11 Tesoro stations. We have 6 Scenic stations, and then we have 6 PetroServe USA stations. And I hope that adds up to 23, or I'm off. So
yes, it does.
Okay, good. Yeah. But and I would say that most all of them have blender pumps. I think we have. I think North Dakota is the number one state in the nation for blender pumps, and then I think PetroServe USA is the number two state.
Yeah.
Because I believe we have about 75 blender pumps.
Okay. Okay.
And so it's different in every station, but there's big demand for E15. People want it.
And I'd point out, too, I know that, and Kent mentioned it, but just, again, the fact that the numbers he got with E15 were without having it on the sign, and just the advertising and word of mouth that they had that.